What's up, gamers, and welcome to Lost at Sea Gaming. I am Hulking Yoda, the captain of this ship, the SS Gamer, and you have just stepped into my captain's quarters, my weekly gaming update show where I talk about my favorite gaming news topic of the past week, discuss what games I've been playing, give tips on some of those games, as well as issue a weekly relevant gaming-related decree. This week, it's all about two of my favorite fighting game franchises, so let's talk about it and dive right into the episode in my news catch of the week. Gamers, for just about as far back as I can remember in my gaming life, I have loved fighting games. Now, don't get me wrong, I love different styles of fighting games more than others. I've loved different franchises in the fighting game genre more than others. But overall, the fighting genre has really stood out to me many, many times over the years. And of course, as many of you listening probably started out the same way I did, as far as where you're, if you share in my love, that is, of the fighting genre, you probably started out right where I did, which was back in the good old days of the arcade. Now, for me, it started in the early 1990s, and man, there were many different arcades that I ventured into. There were arcade cabinets that I played at Pizza Hut restaurants when I would go and eat there and eat dinner with my family. There are many different places that I experienced the arcade. And fighting games were always the biggest draw for me. Anytime we went to the arcade, that was the game or the type of game that I was running to. And obviously, as is probably expected here, Mortal Kombat was always my go-to franchise when it came to the fighting genre. I just always loved Mortal Kombat. There was just always something about that series that screamed and begged for me to enjoy it. It had everything that I looked for, a really cool setting and Outworld and the Nether Realm and Earthrealm and all these different places. Plus the characters, the fighters themselves were just awesome. Even the limited selection comparatively to nowadays of what was in that original Mortal Kombat game. Even those basic characters, if you will, if you want to call them that, of Scorpion and Sub-Zero, Kano, Sonya Blade, Johnny Cage, Liu Kang, Raiden. I mean, those were the original OG classic characters, but every single one of them in their own way resonated with me. And it really wasn't until I got Mortal Kombat, the original, on the PC. Yes, the PC. Now, gamers, this is the days before having basically where nowadays you can use your Xbox or PlayStation controller and use those kind of control schemes and whatnot to play the games you're playing on PC. Well, that wasn't necessarily the case back then. So I, believe it or not, actually used a keyboard. The arrow directional keys, as well as, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, being punch, high punch, low punch, etc., etc. So for me, playing through the original Mortal Kombat and Mortal Kombat 2, it all was on the original PC of back in the early to mid 90s. And I absolutely love them, though. Me and my sister spent countless hours and shared countless memories on that PC playing those two games. But when it came to Mortal Kombat 3 and Mortal Kombat 3 Ultimate, I never got Mortal Kombat 3 on PC. I wanted it so bad, but I honestly don't really remember the specifics of the reasons as to why I didn't. I'm pretty sure it probably had something to do with the fact that around that time, I ended up finally getting my first home console that I owned, a Super Nintendo. And on the Super Nintendo, that is where I purchased Mortal Kombat 3 Ultimate and played it on that console. When you got to Mortal Kombat 4, though, the first 3D polygonal Mortal Kombat, I did play that obviously in the arcade quite a bit and also on the PS1. I will say it was the first Mortal Kombat game that I could not get into it. I didn't like the way the graphics were set up, the 3D aspects of it. I was like, oof. But you know, it was Mortal Kombat Deadly Alliance on the original Xbox that absolutely rekindled my love for this franchise. And Deadly Alliance is absolutely phenomenal, and its sequel, Deception, in my opinion, was even better. Oh, it just took everything that made Deadly Alliance amazing and accentuated it, made it even better. And then the cap off to that trilogy of that era of what is considered the 3D era of Mortal Kombat was Mortal Kombat Armageddon. And I played it on probably not the best console to play it on, but I owned it on the Wii. And I didn't really put a whole lot of time into it, to be honest. It was the one that I never beat out of those three. And the one that I, honestly, if they had a remaster or something come out nowadays for it, I'd probably go ahead and pick it up because, I mean, it literally had every single Mortal Kombat character up to that point in it. So how can you turn down having access to every single Mortal Kombat character ever created, if you're a fan, right? Well, at the time that I played it and got it, I had just gotten a 360, the PS3, and I was more drawn to those consoles, so Armageddon just kind of got lost in the background of everything else. But when it came time to Xbox One and that era of consoles, Mortal Kombat was relaunched again as just Mortal Kombat, essentially Mortal Kombat 9. And then we have Mortal Kombat 10 and 11. And man, I absolutely loved all three of them. 9 was great, a great kickoff to the new era of Mortal Kombat, in my opinion. But 10, woo, 10 just took it and ran with it. And then 11, I thought, was a very solid sequel. I wouldn't say that it was just leaps and bounds above what 10 was, because 10 was just so good. But either way, they were still three excellent titles in the series. But this catch of the week is not just about Mortal Kombat, it's also about the Injustice series. So Injustice, obviously, we got the characters of the DC Universe actually being able to fight in mature settings, a la Mortal Kombat, perform fatalities and such. We couldn't do that in the Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe game, which actually also was really cool. But that had to keep a teen rating and not have any heroes killing each other per DC. Thankfully, they kind of laxed a little bit and allowed NetherRealm to run with it for Injustice. And I loved it. The original Injustice game, it came out back in April of 2013. And I was actually at my brother-in-law's house, and he had purchased the game. And that was the first opportunity I had to put hands to a controller and play the game. And man, it was an awesome experience. This, at that time, graphically, it was insanely amazing to look at and to play and to control. And just those characters under that context and in those circumstances, it was just awesome to be able to do some of the stuff you were able to do with them, the combos, the move sets, the finishers, the storyline of it and all, just with Superman and why he ended up going rogue, if you will, or just nuts. Bottom line, it was excellent. It was awesome. I loved it. And then they did make a sequel, Injustice 2, and that came out 4 years later in May of 2017. In my opinion, it was even better than the original Injustice, and just basically took what that first game did, and kind of like Mortal Kombat 10 did for Mortal Kombat 9, just accentuated it and just blew it up to massive amazingness. Well, we haven't seen Injustice since Injustice 2. And that, if you're keeping track here, we're going on well over 5.5 years at this point. No mention of any kind of sequel, or especially not even a release date. So when it came last week, this past week, you know, there was Ed Boon, the co-creator of the Mortal Kombat franchise and the Injustice series. He's on Twitter, and he's basically putting out there, hey, guys, ask me questions. I'll be here just waiting to answer your questions. So he funneled a lot of them, but there was a few that really stood out above the rest and kind of pointed towards the future of both Mortal Kombat and Injustice. So when it comes to the pattern, the release pattern for NetherRealm Studios, the development studio of these franchises, they have basically, for the longest time, followed this alternating pattern between Mortal Kombat and Injustice. And that started with Mortal Kombat 9, because that released in April of 2011. And then 2 years later, we got Injustice. 2 years later, Mortal Kombat 10. 2 years later, Injustice 2. And 2 years later, Mortal Kombat 11. All releasing in the month of April, except for Injustice 2, which released in May of 17. So obviously NetherRealms likes to release their games in April. Typically, it's every other year we get one of these franchises. Well, again, to reiterate, Injustice 3 technically should have been the next one on the docket if you're following that pattern, which would have meant theoretically April of 2021 is when we should have seen Injustice 3. Well, gamers, last I checked, it's November of 2022. So we are well behind the release date pattern as far as it's concerned there. Now, if we look forward to the future, and again, I take into consideration and understand COVID and many other factors that probably affected any potential continuing to follow the release pattern here. So I get that. But does it mean, basically, we're coming up soon on a release of Injustice 3 or Mortal Kombat 12? Because both games were mentioned and discussed and kind of very briefly in a cheeky kind of way. Ed Boon, you know, just kind of dropping little just drips of information or teases about the potential reality of both. Now, I mean, it's kind of made clear that these are both definite games in the works at NetherRealm Studios without actually coming out and saying that. There's a lot of beating around the bush, but if you read between the lines, you can pick up what Ed Boon's putting down. No clear indication of release for either of these potential games, Mortal Kombat 12 or Injustice 3. But my thing is, would we be getting Injustice 3 next? Because it's technically next up on the docket. And would I be upset with that? Would I rather have Mortal Kombat 12 instead of Injustice 3? Now, when it comes to that, honestly, yeah, I would rather have Mortal Kombat 12 than Injustice 3. Don't get me wrong. I'd be very happy with Injustice 3, but I love Mortal Kombat. I don't get sick of those characters. I don't get sick of that world, that universe. And given a few of the tidbits that Ed Boon mentioned in these tweets, it's got me really excited. Couple things. He made mention that in the next Mortal Kombat, they are going to be reviving a lot of 3D era characters. So again, the 3D era was Deadly Alliance, Deception, and Armageddon. So a lot of characters that were fan favorites over the years that have been left behind in the more recent trilogy of 9, 10, and 11, they are looking at those 3D era characters to bring them back for 12. But for me, the most exciting piece of information is the potential, seemingly confirmed, return of Conquest mode. Gamers, if you played Deadly Alliance, Deception, or Armageddon, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. And I think most Mortal Kombat fans and Conquest fans specifically would agree with me that Deception's Conquest was the best out of the three. See, Conquest mode is essentially, if you don't know, the story mode for Deadly Alliance, Deception, and Armageddon. And if you're only used to the story mode in Mortal Kombat 9, 10, and 11, then it is completely different than that. 9, 10, and 11 is essentially a movie where it pauses every now and then for you to actually control the fights between the characters. But that's it. You have no character control, no 3D world navigation or movement or exploration or anything. Well, in those 3D era games, starting with Deadly Alliance, there was that. It was like its own like game within a game. You had your regular ladder matches and arcade and whatnot for how you wanted to play, if you wanted to play that way. And then you also had this single player story that you could play through and run around in the realms and go through and play through this story. And that gameplay style and mode started with Deadly Alliance, but then they added and completely just expanded on it in Deception and kind of made it into its own little RPG. And even more so, as time went on, adding side quests and just all kinds of amazingness that I eat up. Because I was also a huge fan of Mortal Kombat Shaolin Monks and any good, awesome, story-driven, single-player experience game set in the Mortal Kombat universe, I'm all for it as well. And I loved Shaolin Monks back in the day. So for me, obviously, I am very much, oh man, I would love to see Mortal Kombat 12 3D era characters added to the roster, expanded and updated upon, as well as the return of Conquest mode. Now, don't get me wrong. Injustice 3, I'm sure, will be awesome, just as awesome as the last two, and I'm always down to play around with those characters. But I'll be honest, for whatever reason, when I think about the roster, I mean, sure, there are characters that they haven't dabbled with in the first two Injustice titles that they could bring about in this third one. But I don't really know that any of them get me really excited that are from the DC Universe. Honestly, what I would actually prefer to an Injustice 3, if we're sticking with comic books here, as far as source material, how amazing would it be, gamers, if NetherRealms got the rights and the go-ahead to do a Marvel-style Injustice fighting game? I think that would be awesome because we have yet to see those characters and that kind of a fighting style, that mature rated, if you will, Mortal Kombat style with Marvel characters. I think that would be awesome. Now, Ed Boon also did say, as far as Mortal Kombat 12, it definitely will continue to see the addition of horror movie killers, if you will, still making appearances in forthcoming games. So that's always fun. They always really do a good job of adding what I would say are really cool sci-fi or horror movie characters as playable characters post-launch. So gamers, only time will tell whether we will see any kind of information in the coming months or not, but I will say Mortal Kombat 11 was announced at the Game Awards years ago. So with the Game Awards only barely 2 weeks away, there's a good possibility, who knows, maybe we will see the announcement, the official reveal of Mortal Kombat 12 or Injustice 3, or maybe something just completely brand new. Can't wait to find out, and I cannot wait to talk about it when it is revealed. So that'll do it for my catch of the week. Now let's open up my captain's log and see what games I've been playing. Gamers, this past week I had just under 10 hours of playtime across my play sessions, and the first game that I want to talk to you about that I spent in that 10 hours, about two of those, is none other than Sonic Frontiers. So last time I talked about Sonic Frontiers on the show, I was actually leaving you with a little bit of a disappointment that I had with the game, and not that it was bad, but it was just kind of the world of the Kronos Island that you're exploring was very barren, and I wanted more from it. I hadn't really done a whole lot, but I also was explaining that, I understand it's the very beginning of the game. Maybe that first little island that was essentially the tutorial island, maybe that's why it wasn't really grabbing me, is because it was just that, the tutorial island. Sometimes games, when they open up and they get past the tutorial, they just become amazing. So that's what I was hoping for with Sonic Frontiers. And this game just never really let go of me mentally since I had played that first hour. So I finally was excited to get back to the game this past week. And over a couple play sessions, I did get another 2 hours played. And of course, that was me continuing to explore Kronos Island. Now, I'm very excited to say that I absolutely got way more into this game during these play sessions. And each time, the game just left me wanting to play more of it while I was in between those two gaming sessions. So right now in the game, my current main objective is basically collecting these thoughts that belong to the character of Amy. And if you follow the Sonic lore and the cartoons, comics, games, you'll know who Amy is, a friend of Sonic's. And these thoughts of hers, they are spread throughout the island, and you can find them by various means. So Amy has been caught basically in the space between dimensions, and she's coming through to Sonic on Kronos Island as kind of this sort of a computer glitch. And in order to find out exactly where she is and where she's stuck and how to get her back, Sonic has to track down these memories and collect them to piece together exactly how it is that we're going to do that. So again, to collect these memories, there's multiple ways you can access them or reach them. And essentially, they're these little red heart icons. Now, some of them, you really just have to jump up to a cliff edge or onto a grinding rail, and you get to the icon and you collect it. Other times, you might have to do a special little mini game or whatnot for them to pop up for your taking. But The most fun I had collecting these was there are a few massive, extremely tall towers spread throughout this area of Chronos Island, and you can wall run as Sonic. And man, that's pretty exhilarating. It's pretty fun wall running and dodging different things here or there to get to the top, and then boom, waiting for you at the top is a memory. Now, the game also says that you can get Amy's thoughts by fishing. And I gotta tell you, I am super stoked to actually try out the fishing minigame in Sonic Frontiers, but I've yet to see anywhere to fish, which really sucks because for whatever reason, I don't know what it is, just every game that seems to have a fishing minigame, I've always thoroughly enjoyed it, whether it's Zelda, Final Fantasy XV, Red Dead Redemption 2, anytime there's fishing, even Far Cry, Assassin's Creed Valhalla, I could go on and on and on. I love fishing in real life, but also anytime there's mini games in a game, I typically gravitate towards it and thoroughly enjoy it. So especially in a Sonic game, I'm just like, man, I really want to see what this is all about. You know, I see pictures online and articles about fishing locations, and I'm like, man, I don't want to go into it to spoil anything, but I really want to know what that's like in this game. So to be able to find memories via fishing, where are the fish? Where are the fishing holes? I haven't found them yet, but apparently they are other ways and means of getting these thoughts of Amy's. So ultimately, tracking down and collecting these thoughts, that's the main thing that I'm doing. But while I'm doing that, obviously, I'm also exploring everything else that I pass on Chronos Island. Defogging the map at certain points that allow you to do so. There's basically these different tower points or different mini games that if you complete them, they will unlock and defog that little minor circumference of area right around that location that you're in. And ultimately, interacting with the Coco population was the other big thing that I was doing these two play sessions. Now, the Coco population, they are the inhabitants of Chronos Island. And the Coco, they are basically these tiny rock sculptures, and they look like these cute little beings, and they hop around and make these little jingling sounds, and really you just kind of collect them as Sonic as you're traveling around Chronos. And I have just recently discovered why I am collecting them. I honestly really had no idea what the purpose of these things were. I just noticed that I kept collecting them as I would run into them as Sonic, and then if you just stop and stand idle as Sonic, just they all pop up around you. All the ones that you've collected so far, they just pop up and hop around you and make these noises. And I'm like, man, this is kind of creepy. What is going on? Well, I found out why you're collecting them. So there is an elder Coco, and he's basically asking you to return any lost or wandering mini Coco to him. And in exchange for doing this, he's going to increase your speed and or your ring capacity. So at the time that I ran into him, I actually happened to have a ton of Coco and was able to increase both my ring capacity and my speed a couple of times. And then ultimately, I moved back to exploring Chronos. Gamers, I definitely enjoyed my time with Sonic Frontiers these past 2 hours way more than that first one. And I am still really excited about continuing playing and opening up a lot of the things like fishing that I've seen and read about online that you can do in the game. I will say, my only consistent gripe with this game so far, it's got to be the inconsistency of Sonic's control. Now, at times, he does feel tight and loose at the same time in a good way. But there's other times where he feels way too tight and his directionality just doesn't seem immediately responsive. So like when I'm moving the analog stick left or right as he's walking up a wall, as I mentioned earlier, there may be a delay of just a second before he shifts right or left. But that second's delay or hesitation is the difference of me running into a barrier and falling off the side of this tower that I'm running up the side of and having to redo it over again. And there's multiple little things like that that have happened throughout the course of my exploration of Chronos Island. Again, it's not a major gripe, but it's one that I really do hope does not hold the game back going forward for me. Now, I also will say in combat, when there's multiple enemies that are bunched together, I do feel like the camera doesn't really track them that well and puts what I think is too much responsibility on the player. Even when you're using the lock-on sometimes, if the camera is not panned down quick enough or just right enough, you're not going to see the icon to where you can connect your attacks. Because basically the way this game is set up, whether it's spring buttons or boards or grinding rails and hopping off of those, and basically Sonic will dart from icon to icon or object to object as long as this little white hollow diamond icon pops up. That same icon pops up on the enemies, and you can kind of chain together combos between the enemies as long as you see that icon. So if the camera is not angled just perfect, it screws up your combo chain, and that can be really frustrating in the middle of combat. So that I'm trying to work out. Is it really the game, or is it me that I haven't found my sweet spot with the combat yet? So I recognize I'm still early in the game, but it is a frustration that I've had with it so far that I did want to share with you in case it was the game, and to kind of give you a heads up if you hadn't played it yet. Now you kind of know what to expect a little bit from the combat going into it. But gamers, that was not the only game that I played this past week. Obviously, if you've been following the show, you know my number one go-to game at this current time, and for the foreseeable future, is none other than God of War Ragnarok. Gamers, this past week, I dropped another 7 hours into the amazingness that is God of War Ragnarok. And if you've been keeping track, that'll put me at a total of 36 hours played in this game world. Now, to pick up where I last left you last week, I was exploring Vanaheim. And there was just a ton to explore in this realm, among those river passages that I was talking about with their ancient temples and beautiful waterfalls and surrounding jungle environment. And let me just say real quick, with that jungle environment and the water everywhere, just an absolutely gorgeous, amazing job with the details, Sony Santa Monica. And one of those details that really stood out to me, maybe it sounds crazy if you're listening to me, you're like, what? But the algae, the green algae that floats on the surface of a lot of the waterways in those rivers, it just adds to the immersion and the realism and the amazingness of detail within the game world. As far as the visuals are concerned, for me, and I don't know what it is. Every time I would stop and my eyes would catch the algae, I'm like, oh man, that's just really cool. I don't know why. Maybe I'm just weird. But regardless, it's an amazing, beautiful detail that Sony Santa Monica did not leave out. So ultimately, I cleaned up everything that I was doing or that I felt that I could do at that current time in Vanaheim. There are still these cracks and walls that have air coming out of them that obviously there's an ability that I don't have yet that I'm going to need in order to progress or to get past these areas. So as far as I could tell, I did everything that I could do at the current point in the game that I was at, so I decided to move on. Now, at this point, I had the option to either go back to the tree with Brock and Sindri's house and continue the main story, or I actually had the option to go back to Alfheim, because there was a couple of quests and some new areas that I, with the party that I had, now was able to have access to and enjoy. So, of course, me being me and the kind of gamer that I am, I'm like, all right, well, before I go back on the main story, I'm going to do everything else that's available to me side quest-wise now. So, with that being the case, I did take the realm gates and took them to none other than Alfheim, my second trip back to Alfheim in this game. And ultimately, back to the barren sands, the desert in Alfheim. Now, if you remember, if you listened to my show a couple weeks ago when I was talking about my time there, there was an area of the barren sands that I could not access yet. Well, now I am able to access that area, so I began my exploration there. Now, the exact name of this area is the Forbidden Sands. And it was actually here that I did complete a few more side quests. The one that I went there to do, I'm not going to say anything because I don't want to spoil anything for anybody, but there was a side quest that I had gotten and couldn't go any further with the last time I was in Alfheim. So I came back to the realm for that quest, completed that quest, but in the process of completing that quest and exploring the Forbidden Sands, I picked up another one, another side quest, completed that, as well as another side quest that I had forgotten about in my journal. And the cool thing about these quests is they each one had a different gameplay style to enjoy. So one quest had me back in the underground tunnels of the desert, doing some puzzle solving, interspersed with some light elf combat, while you have another was very lore heavy, exploring an elven library and had me reading many documents that were inside, kind of getting some backstory on a lot of the stuff going on there in Alfheim and just different species and conflicts in general within the w lore and of the world and of the game, which is very interesting for me. I love that kind of stuff. And then the others, they were honestly essentially pretty much mini boss fights. And one, oh man, the one was against this gray belly drake or dragon. And let me just tell you, gamers, that was that was a fun fight. So all in all, I had a great time during my second visit to Alfheim. And at this point, I again did all that it seemed that I could do there for now. And I left the realm to head back to the treehouse and continue progressing that main story. So there were a few things that I did to progress that story. And ultimately, that will lead me to my highlight of the week. Gamers, the highlight for me this past week and all the hours that I played amongst God of War Ragnarok and Sonic Frontiers, for me, it was none other than my time spent in the realm of Asgard. Now, I'm not going to say how I got there or what exactly I was doing in there. So, those of you who may be worried about spoilers, don't worry. I'm not going to go into those details. But it absolutely is and was my highlight of my playtime between Sonic and God of War this past week. And the reason why, first, visually, the realm is absolutely gorgeous. I loved the look and feel of the realm and the places that you go within it. But the biggest thing for me about my time in Asgard was the story. The story that happens while you are there, the characters that you interact with, the things that you do, the things that happen were just absolutely mind-melting to me. And I loved every second of it. I could not get enough of it. It was just amazing. Now, it wasn't just the visuals of the story, though. I gotta say, the gameplay was right on point as it has been the entire game for God of War Ragnarok. And it was just awesome. Again, the pacing in this game is bar none. You have different environmental puzzles as you're exploring, and you're picking up different lore or Hacksilver or different artifacts. And then you go, and you're next thing you know, you're in this fight. And it's just this amazing feeling that you get when you're playing and fighting, and everything is flowing perfectly. There were multiple moments of that. But really, the thing that shone through for me this past week in Asgard, it was that story. I just can't tell you how amazing that story was for me and how much it resonated. And I just, the story overall in God of War Ragnarok has just been phenomenal. And it just continued to escalate itself, is all I'm saying, in Asgard. So clearly, easily, my highlight of the week, my time in Asgard. Now let's go open up a buried treasure gaming chest of tips I have for you in God of War Ragnarok. Gamers, this week, the tip I want to give you in God of War Ragnarok is when using sigil arrows, shoot the same orb location multiple times to expand its size. Now, I will say that is something that the game will remind you of. But I apparently missed it the first time that it clarified that to me. So I had no idea until a friend of mine that was at work actually playing the game, he had told me, he said, "Yeah, you know that when you shoot the orbs in the center on the symbol that shows up, it actually expands the size of the orb and you can expand it up to three sizes." I said, "No way." Bottom line, absolutely take that to heart when you're coming into situations where it's like, "Man, I see the fire. I know that fire can combine with these orbs. How can I transfer the fire from where it's actually its origin is to the bush I need to burn or to the brazier that I need to light?" Whatever the case may be, bottom line is it's not just for that, but there's so many different ways or reasons that you may want to use an expanded orb. So keep that in mind. Sigil arrows, when using them, you can shoot that center point of where it lands, up to three times. Now, I will say you can only have up to three orbs of any size at any given time. Once you shoot three separate orbs, if you shoot a fourth location, then that's going to wipe out that first orb's location that you shot. So just keep that in mind. But the key, if you're figuring out or trying to figure out how to access or get closer to other areas and combine and chain together orbs easier or at all, it's probably because you got to expand that orb's size. So that's this week's buried treasure. Now let's go see what this week's Captain's Decree is. Gamers, this week and looking up and thinking about and remembering how amazing the memories that I've had with Mortal Kombat have been over the years and just fighting games in general, it got me thinking about what I wanted to talk about in this week's Captain's Decree, and that is this. Primal Rage needs to make a comeback. So if you gamers are too young to know or remember Primal Rage, Primal Rage was yet another fighting game that did see two entries created for it. The first one was the more popular. You saw it in arcades. It also had a at-home version on Super Nintendo, Genesis. I had it on Super Nintendo. Now, for me, it started in the arcades, as did all the other fighting games that I've talked about, right? Well, Primal Rage, if you don't know what that is where it was in the prehistoric era, where there's dinosaurs and giant apes and all kinds of creatures. And basically, you had your characters that you chose from. And my favorite character was Diablo, the red and black Tyrannosaurus Rex. He spit fireballs and he just looked awesome. I loved his look. For whatever reason, I was always drawn to Diablo. Ironically, my second favorite character was Blizzard, who was a giant ape that was white-haired, had longer white hair just past his shoulders. He was kind of a blue-chested, blue hand, and all of his hair was kind of a grayish color, obviously going off of those snow and ice color tones. But he was awesome because he could freeze you. He was basically the Sub-Zero of Primal Rage. Diablo, you can kind of look at it if you want comparisons. Very much so, Primal Rage is Scorpion. So as those two were my favorite Mortal Kombat characters, it kind of makes sense then that they would, Diablo and Blizzard would be my favorite Primal Rage characters. My sister also loved Primal Rage, and her favorite character was Vertigo, a giant cobra snake standing on 2 feet. And man, she was pretty intense too if it got into a fight. My sister was pretty good with her. I would definitely give her props on that. But I love Primal Rage. You had these followers or worshipers that were tiny little people that were at your feet the whole time throughout the match. And as you were losing health, you could actually kick them up or like whip the tail around a Diablo or pound the ground with Blizzard, and they would pop up in the air and you could actually try to reach out and bite or eat them with Diablo or grab them in the air and eat them as Blizzard. And they would actually refill just a little bit of your health. The environments were obviously all kind of like prehistoric Jurassic era kind of settings, volcanoes and jungles and all kinds of different things. And I absolutely loved that game and its characters and setting. And I would love if somebody out there would find it in their soul to have a drive to remake in today's technology a brand new Primal Rage game. We've seen Killer Instinct kind of modernized when it came out at the launch of the Xbox One. Obviously, we've seen Mortal Kombat redone and updated and modernized. Street Fighter has got a new one coming out. Street Fighter 6 looks amazing. Tekken 7 looks amazing, coming out soon. There's so many really good fighting games that are just continuing to evolve and come out with new series. And look, I understand that Primal Rage was not as massive a success as these other series that I mentioned. But I really do wish that the cult following that it has, that it seems to have at least online, I wish the right person would catch wind of that and think, you know what? Let me give it a shot. Let me see if we can remake this Primal Rage for today's audience and see if there's some interest there. Because gamers, I'll tell you what, the second that I am told that I can boot up a brand new Primal Rage and plays Diablo, I am right there. That'll do it for this week's episode. I hope you've enjoyed your time aboard the SS Gamer. You can join its crew by reaching out to me via email at lostatseagaming365@gmail.com, as well as searching for Hulking Yoda on the Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo Switch networks. You can also find me on social media, on Instagram at lostatseagaming, as well as on Twitter at lostatseagamin, the number one. Thank you for listening, and until the sea says otherwise, we'll keep sailing.